Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Less than 5 hours. 5 weeks of trial, over 30 prosecution witnesses, a mountain of forensic evidence, DNA ballistics, surveillance footage, recorded phone calls, financial records stretching back years, and the jury needed less than 5 hours to convict Paul Canaro on all 15 counts. 4 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated arsons, weapons charges, theft, hindering prosecution, every single count, guilty. And the first thing they asked for minutes into deliberations was to rewatch the surveillance footage, the one showing Paul Canaro's Porsche McCann leaving his Ocean Township home and returning on the morning of the murders. They wanted to see him driving to and from the scene. That tells you everything you need to know about where this jury's head was at. And they asked for the knife. The weapon prosecutors say was used to stab 8-year-old Sophia Canaro at least 17 times. They wanted to hold it in their hands. The judge had it brought into the jury room with brown paper and nitrile gloves. By early Friday afternoon, it was over. Paul Canaro sat motionless at the as the foreman read guilty on count after count after count. His wife and daughters, who had been there every single day of his trial, sitting behind him, supporting him, were not in the courtroom to hear it, but Jennifer Canaro's family was, 3 rows deep. And when counts 3 and 4 were read, the murders of Jesse and Sophia, someone in that group gasped. Another was heard saying, "There's finally justice for Sophia." What do you think? Did they get it right? Did the jury get it right in this case? I don't know how you see it any other way. I really do not. If you're looking at all the evidence here, I don't know how you go down another road. If you see another road, I'd love to logically hear it. If they got it right, tell us in the comments. Substack and YouTube is where you can do that. The links are in the description. As we continue to work our way through this case, 7 years, that's how long this family waited. 7 years since Keith Canaro was found shot 5 times on his own front lawn while his house burned behind him. 7 years since firefighters discovered Jennifer, Jesse, and Sophia inside, stabbed, burned, left to die in the flames. 7 years of legal motions, pretrial hearings, a fight that went all the way to the New Jersey Supreme Court over whether certain evidence could be shown to a jury. And then less than 5 hours to decide. Here's the thing about this trial. It was never really close. The defense wanted you to think it was. They threw everything they had at reasonable doubt. Blame the youngest Canaro brother, Corey. Blame tunnel vision by investigators. Blame the cops for not collecting enough DNA from enough places. Defense attorney Monica Mastalone even introduced a brand new 2-person conspiracy theory during her closing argument. Not during testimony. Not through a witness in her summation. After 5 weeks of trial, she was asking the jury to believe something she never proved. She never explained the genes. In fact, they didn't even mount a defense. When it was their turn, it was, "We're good." A trial that was supposed to go on for another month. They're like, "Eh, you might have us. You might." The jeans with Jesse and Sophia's DNA found in Paul Canaro's basement, bloodstained denim frozen in a pile of clothing that firefighters kept from burning when they put out the fire. Paul allegedly sat at his own house. I guess we can say he did now. DNA from both children on those jeans. DNA from Sophia in black nitrile gloves in the same pile. Sophia's hair on a scarf found there. An unfired 9mm round tucked into the clothing. The same type of ammunition used to kill Keith and Jennifer. Just happens to be in Paul's basement. The defense's own DNA expert couldn't make that evidence go away. He quibbled with the software prosecutors used to analyze complex samples, but he couldn't explain how an innocent man ends up with his murdered niece and nephew's blood on clothes hidden in his basement. And that's before you get to the murder weapon, the Sig Sauer 9mm pistol seized from Paul Canaro's home, matched to seven fired casings and an unfired round recovered from the Colts Neck crime scene. A separate barrel found in a tactical backpack in Paul's Porsche, wrapped in paper towels inside a Ziploc bag. You know how you. No, it's not how you store that stuff. Matched to five bullets pulled from the bodies. The gun was his. The ammunition was his. The ballistics were undeniable. This guy was a dope. The dopiest of dopes. You understand why his brother was ready to get rid of him. They'd had enough. Blood only lasted so long. You're my brother only lasted so long when one party couldn't hold up their end of the bargain. And the dope decided it was his right to go on in life, not the ones who were holding him accountable. There's a lovely broomstick waiting for your ass in prison. Those kids, what you did to them, they're not going to be very kind to you there. Just saying. Enjoy. And then there's the footage. Paul's own security camera captured him walking into his garage at 1:27 in the morning on November 20th, 2018. Then the system goes dark. He shuts it off. Cameras in the basement where the guns were stored, where the bloody clothes were later found, all went black. Prosecutor Christopher Decker told the jury exactly what that meant. "We know," he said. "We just didn't see because Paul shut off the cameras. The cameras would have shown who opened the gun safe, who left and who came back, who put the bloody evidence in that pile. We're looking at where those cameras pointed and what they would have shown," Decker said. With the last image from the basement camera displayed for the jury, it's so obvious why they were shut off. Surveillance footage from neighbors in Ocean Township tracked Paul's Porsche Macan, because he's an idiot, with its distinctive taillights, leaving at 2:07 a.m. and returning at 4:08 a.m. Security footage from Keith's garage captured a silhouette of a man outside the door at 2:51 a.m. right before the power of the house was cut. Decker pointed to the figure's head during closing arguments. "That's not Corey Canaro," he said. "That's not Keith Canaro, because they're both bald." The defense spent a lot of time on Corey, the youngest brother, the one who allegedly maneuvered himself into control of Keith's estate after the murders, the one the defense insisted should have been investigated as a suspect. But here's what the defense couldn't do. Put Corey at the scene. Put Corey's DNA on anything. Explain how Corey would have planted evidence in Paul's basement while Paul's own cameras, the one Paul turned off, were rolling. Lieutenant Patrick of the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office said it plainly on the witness stand. "Corey Canaro was never a suspect in this investigation. We followed the evidence. The evidence always led us to Paul Canaro." And then there's where Paul's daughters, Katie and Marissa, they took the stand to save their father. Katie, an ER nurse, described Keith and Jennifer as her second parents. "Every holiday we spent together, birthdays, my whole life," she broke down crying, recalling the moment that at a police station, when they learned the family was dead. Marissa testified for less than 5 minutes. She described her father collapsing when detectives told them what happened. "My dad was really upset and crying," she said. "He fell to the floor. I was sitting across from him at that point. They were trying to humanize him, show the jury that a man who loved his family couldn't have done this. Character witnesses testified that Paul and Keith were fused at the hips, that Paul loved his brother, that he was protective of him, that he would drop everything to help. But here's what none of them could explain. Why was their cousin's blood on jeans in their father's basement? Why did he shut off his own cameras at 1:27 in the morning? Why was there a go bag packed in his Porsche passport, savings bonds, and his daughter's names, a disassembled gun barrel, a stack of credit cards, an automatic, a knife? If he was asleep when the fire started, if he had nothing to do with any of this, explain all that. And I mean, I'm not trying to cast anything negative on this daughter. She's trying to do mental gymnastics and live in a world where her father did this to her family. I don't know how you square that up. I do not know. My God. But yeah, I get it. You're going to go on the stand and you're going to plead your version of reality, at least the version of reality that your mind is allowing you to conceive of being possible. Even when reality tells you it's not, it'll take time. Obviously, it hasn't kicked in yet. Maybe now that Dad's going away forever, it will. His response to the character witnesses who talked about the special bond between Paul and Keith, the only special bond we've heard about is Paul taking his brother's money. Because that's what this was about, money. The day before the murders, Keith Canero confronted his brother over missing funds. On a phone call captured by Waze cameras inside Keith's home, Keith yelled at Paul, "I need to see where the money went." According to prosecutors, Paul had been draining Keith's irrevocable trust account, like a good brother does. The one established nearly two decades earlier to pay premiums on a $3 million life insurance policy. 19 withdrawals, tens of thousands of dollars. Paul was also allegedly stealing roughly $11,000 a month from their shared businesses, claiming personal expenses as insurance reimbursements. Keith gave Paul a deadline, 8 p.m. on November 19th, 2018. "Get back to me with the bank statements and online access." Paul never responded. Instead, prosecutor Nicole Wallace told the jury he began making plans that were excluded 8 hours later. You know how those plans ended. Keith was found shot 5 times, once in the back, 4 times in the head, on his front lawn, apparently lured outside to check on the home's power, which had been cut. Inside, Jennifer had been shot in the head and stabbed multiple times. She was found on the stairs from the basement to the first floor, badly charred by the fire. Jesse, 11 years old, was stabbed repeatedly and found on the kitchen floor. Sophia, 8 years old, stabbed at least 17 times, including defensive wounds on her legs as she tried to fight off her attacker from the back, and found on a staircase landing between the first and second floors. Medical examiners found soot in both children's airways, carbon monoxide in her blood. They were still alive when the fire started. They died from smoke inhalation combined with their stab wounds. Paul allegedly set the fire in a basement storage closet to destroy evidence. Then, according to prosecutors, he drove home and set his own house on fire with his wife and daughters inside to make it look like the whole family had been targeted, to cover his tracks, to burn the bloody clothes in his basement. But Ocean Township firefighters got there too fast. They saved the house, they saved the family, and they preserved the evidence that would convict him 7 years later. Prosecutors called Paul's financial situation a house of cards. The motive wasn't about what he stood to gain from the life insurance payout. It was about what he stood to lose. His income, his position in the business, his brother's trust, everything was about to collapse, and Keith was the one holding the hammer. After the verdict was read, Monmouth County Prosecutor Raymond Santiago stepped outside the courthouse. Jennifer Canero's family stood behind him. "I know the impact this has had not only on the family, friends, and the community at large in Monmouth County," Santiago said, "but Keith, Jennifer, Jesse, and Sophia have waited for over 7 years for accountability to come forward. outside the courthouse, friends of Sophia, now teenagers, girls who lost their friend when they were 8. Spoke about the justice they waited for. Lost her when they were 8. They're almost adults now. So would Sophia. She would have been. Saying, I'm just grateful to have justice for her and her family. It's been so long, she deserves it. She was a bright light, said Sophia, or Sophie Winkleman. Grateful I got to know her. I miss her. Paul Canaro is now scheduled for sentencing on May 12th. He faces multiple life sentences without the possibility of parole. His defense team has until February 23rd to file a motion for a new trial. A spokesperson said they plan to pursue all available post-trial remedies. But the verdict stands, guilty on all counts, guilty of murdering his brother, guilty of murdering his sister-in-law, guilty of murdering his 11-year-old nephew and his 8-year-old niece, guilty of setting 2 fires to cover it up, guilty of everything. The defense spent nearly 4 hours in closing arguments, introducing theories they never proved. Mystery conspirators, two-person plots, a brother who was never charged. The prosecution spent 5 weeks methodically presenting evidence that pointed to one man. And one man only. The jury took less than 5 hours to decide who was telling the truth. 7 years for justice, 4 hours to deliver it, because the evidence was never really in question. Only Paul Canaro's willingness to admit what he did, which obviously has never happened and never will. Your thoughts in the comment section on our Substack. The link is in the description or on YouTube. I'd love to hear how you think this played out. Are we missing something? Is there something else in this case? Or did the jury land it right? You tell me. We'll continue our conversation there. Before we do, please press subscribe wherever it is you are downloading podcasts. If it's on Apple Podcasts, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Take us with you in audio form wherever you go. Spotify, iHeart, you name it, we are there. All right. Continuing the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.